And just like you, it's like, how can this be possible? We have a green amendment. And then even I have to remind myself, because we just got our green amendment 7 years ago.
Hi there, and welcome back to another episode of Sustaining with Shayna, a show where I will share all the amazing and exciting works of sustainability happening across the eastern foothills of the Appalachian Mountains to the lush farmlands of southeastern Pennsylvania. By celebrating our community, we can help to bridge the gap between local and international sustainability endeavors. Today's guest is Maya Van Rossum. Maya is the Delaware Riverkeeper and founder of the grassroots nonprofit Green Amendments for the Generations. Together, we talked about her vitally important work in fighting for climate justice against the fossil fuel industry in Pennsylvania and also Pennsylvania's Green Amendment. Since launching Green Amendments for the Generations, constitutional amendments have been proposed in New York, New Jersey, Maryland, Vermont, and West Virginia. Before we meet Maya, hear an announcement and an update about the podcast. Here at the Sustaining with Shayna podcast, I strive to create and maintain a space that lifts up stories about sustainability and the environment that are not being heard in our community, along with sharing new and exciting information around these topics that our community may not have discovered yet or benefited from. I cannot share these stories without your generous support. Please consider supporting my platform that I am able to serve you, the listeners. If you would like to financially support the podcast, please hop on over to the Sustaining with Shayna website and click on the green donate button found in the top right-hand corner on the homepage. I am looking forward to new and exciting projects and topics ahead. Also, I'm always looking at ways that I can engage and interact with this special community more. As always, glad you're here, and thanks a million for listening. Welcome back to another episode of Sustaining with Shayna. I'm really excited about this episode and what my guest has to share about the work they're doing. So, Maya, please introduce yourself.
I want to congratulate you on this great podcast, and I want to thank you so much for giving me the honor of being able to be a part of it. I'm really excited about that. So, thank you.
Thank you.
So I have a couple of hats. So I'm Maya Van Rossum. And one of my hats is that for the last 26 years, I've had the honor of being the Delaware Riverkeeper and leader of a four-state organization called the Delaware Riverkeeper Network that does environmental advocacy and litigation and all that that encompasses. But also that now I have a second hat as the founder of Green Amendments for the Generations and the author of a book titled The Green Amendment, which is part of that work. And that is a new national movement that is about advancing this idea of green amendments across our nation, which we're gonna talk about. But that is really a direct outgrowth of my work as the Delaware Riverkeeper. So right now I'm wearing multiple hats, but all of it's fun and exciting and important and hopefully inspiring to people who are working to fight for the earth.
Yeah, it's been exciting to see your journey, especially like in the realm of the Green Amendment, which we'll talk about later. But before that, I'd like For you to talk about the work that the Delaware River Keepers has been doing around the fight to ban fracking in Pennsylvania. When I kind of joined protests in high school, like 10 years ago, I distinctly remember that the Delaware River Keepers were a big driving force in the anti-fracking movement.
Well, I'm so thrilled that you remember that, and I always thank you for the opportunity. So here within our beautiful Delaware River watershed, actually the battle against fracking started before we even realized it. Way back in the late 1980s, when we petitioned to have the Delaware River, the upper reaches of the Delaware River, designated as outstanding national resource waters under the Clean Water Act. Long story short, we got out of a special regulatory agency that's focused on the Delaware River called the Delaware River Basin Commission. We got this special designation called Special Protection Waters Designation that brought with it a whole new regulatory program focused on protecting the existing water quality of the upper reaches of the Delaware River. And that was first applied in response to our advocacy in 1992. The petition went in 89, the designation in 92. Fast forward to around 2008, when the fracking industry comes knocking on the boundaries of the Delaware River watershed. Well, we very quickly through our research could see that there was no way to meet the obligation of protecting existing water quality and having fracking in your watershed. So we immediately went to the Delaware River Basin Commission, and we said to them, look, to meet your regulatory obligation, you have to put in place a prohibition on fracking within the boundaries of our watershed. And they actually did that. And in 2010, we got in place a moratorium against drilling and fracking anywhere within the boundaries of the Delaware River watershed. And that moratorium actually remains in place to this day.
So then my next question is with that, because you talked about something that was really important with that, especially considering there was a moratorium in the Delaware River Basin, but in the state of Pennsylvania, we still don't have a moratorium for the whole entire state. So in the most, I would say probably in the last few weeks, there's been criminal charges that our Attorney General of Pennsylvania has filed against big oil giants like Cabot Oil and Gas. Could you talk maybe a little bit more about that from your perspective as the Delaware River Keepers, and just, I guess, a synopsis on what's been going on, especially for those that don't know or don't live in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, so fracking came to Pennsylvania around the mid-2000s. And at that point, which we're going to explore a little bit later, we did not have a living, thriving, legally enforceable Green Amendment that would protect the environmental rights of the people of Pennsylvania. So absent that, given the current system and state and federal laws that were in place in the Commonwealth, it was really easy for the industry to run roughshod over Pennsylvania's communities and Pennsylvania's environments, and really to have their way with the state, which they did, and which they, you know, have done for a very long time. There has been in place and still is in place today a very pro-fracking legislature in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And whether you're talking about Democrat or Republican, all of the governors of Pennsylvania, from Governor Rendell when it started through Governor Corbett to now Governor Wolf, have been supportive of the fracking industry. And as a result, the industry has been allowed to continue to proliferate. But through our Green Amendment work, we are finally able to start putting a check on the industry, and we are having an impact. One of the powerful things that we have right now is there is in place an Attorney General in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania that really takes seriously the responsibility to protect the Constitution of the state, including the environmental rights of the people of Pennsylvania, and has been using his constitutional authority along with state laws to really start to hold the industry accountable for the harms that they are inflicting on communities and the environment. And one of the most recent has to do with, as you said, going against Cabot for their historic contamination of waterways, drinking water, and the environment in Dimock, Pennsylvania. A story that people might remember from the film Gaslands. So of course, oil and gas is fighting back, and we continue to expect to see that. But just knowing that we are starting to get into place government officials who take seriously their responsibility to protect our environment is really powerful and important. And we are seeing that in the Attorney General of Pennsylvania, Josh Shapiro.
Yeah, and I think it's really important to even note too for some of the listeners that right as the shutdown happened here in Pennsylvania, the Pennsylvania legislature was trying to pass through, I think it was House Bill 1100, that would give subsidies to these industry giants. And the fact that in the middle of a pandemic or a pandemic about to start, that our legislature was actively working against the residents and the health and safety of the residents to give tax breaks basically to the industry.
Right now, today, that piece of legislation and those incentives are back up before the legislature. And what we understand is that a deal has been cut and the die has been cast to, in fact, pass the legislation and put in place subsidies for the oil and gas industry, despite the devastating impacts they're having on our environment, on our communities, and very costly impacts, right? So if what you care about is money, which so many of these legislators do, we're talking about big bucks on the taxpayers of the people of Pennsylvania for having to clean up the mess that the fracking industry is creating, whether you're talking about, you know, pollution of our environment or the drinking water, whether you're talking about the damage to roads and roadways, you know, and community quality of life, whether you're talking about the ramifications of the pollution that washes out when we've got these massive rainstorms. I mean, the costs on community members are endless in terms of their health, their safety, the quality of their lives, their property values, but also what they and we as taxpayers are forced to take responsibility for because of this fracking industry. So you are absolutely right. It is absolutely outrageous. And unfortunately, our legislators have been continuing to work to negotiate deals to be able to advance that cause. And they are literally right now today revisiting that. So we'll see what happens.
It's despicable. It really is, especially when it's like you have all these compounding crises at once, an economic crisis and a pandemic and the climate crisis. And just to think that these legislators, only care about what's in it for them and what's in it for the industry and the taxpayers, and the taxpayers to come generations later are going to be the ones paying for their wrongful decisions.
Yeah, and it really is important to note also, and I'm so with you, but also so often people think when it comes to the environment, Republicans, Democrats. Well, you know what? When it comes to fracking, the Republicans and the Democrats are both all in with this devastating industry. They're not reading the science. Right, they're not paying attention to the law. They're not looking at the economic devastation that's left behind. And really, as you said, it is very, very clear that the only reason or way they can be supportive of this industry is because there is something in it for them personally. So they are selling the rest of us out, selling out future generations, selling out our earth so that they can get something politically, economically, or otherwise as a result.
Yeah. Yeah. And another note to that, my state rep actually voted, I think this was back in March when when it was back and forth and it went to the governor's desk and he ended up vetoing it initially, my state rep actually voted for the bill. And that's largely because of being pro-union. And it's just so frustrating that it's like, okay, you're pro-union, but can't we also be pro-union for green jobs? Can't you take that money that you would subsidize the oil and gas industry in this very same bill and use it to fund green, sustainable union jobs instead?
Yep.
It's so frustrating.
Right. And I mean, and the science, right, the research has shown you create 3 to 5 times the number of jobs if you go down the green energy path, the green renewable energy versus dirty fossil fuels. So, you know, so that's how you know that it's really, you know, these are all excuses that legislators use when it's really about themselves and what's in it for them. And that's what's so, I don't even want to say disappointing. I mean, it's really despicable that that's what we're seeing here in Pennsylvania. But you know, slowly we're getting people like the attorney general in, right? There are other people that are getting into office that really believe in the power of environmental protection. On the other hand, at the same time, right, there are people that are being forced out of office. Senator Dalen Leach was a powerful advocate against fracking in our state, put forth a ban against fracking, really a powerful leader. And because of dirty politics, he seems to be on his way out.
Mm-hmm. So kind of going off of that, and our attorney general starting to really hold these industries accountable, can you talk about more around Pennsylvania's Green Amendment? Why is it important? Where did it come from? How old it is? And does it exist in any other state in the union?
Yeah. So, you know, in 1971, we had a super smart state senator, Senator Franklin Curry, in the Pennsylvania legislature, who realized, well, he actually got elected to office on an environmental platform. And there's some iconic photos of him holding water highly contaminated by the coal industry. And, you know, he built his political platform in large part on the importance of protecting our environment. When he got into office, one of the things he realized and recognized was that one of the reasons why Pennsylvania's environment was allowed to become so degraded is because we were not giving environmental protection and environmental rights the same highest level of recognition and protection that we were giving to those other fundamental freedoms we hold dear, like the rights to free speech and freedom of religion, private property rights, even gun rights. Those things are all recognized and protected in the Bill of Rights section of our state and our federal constitutions. But the rights to pure water, clean air, and a healthy environment were not in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And so Senator Curry decided he was going to change that. And through his leadership in 1971, by unanimous vote of both houses in the state legislature and a vote of 4 to 1 of the people, Pennsylvania had added to the Bill of Rights section of its state constitution, again, the rights to pure water, clean air, a healthy environment, and recognized the duty of every government official in the Commonwealth to protect those rights for both present and future generations. Now, sadly, very quickly after that amendment got added, that's called Article 1, Section 27 is where you find it. Very quickly after Article 1, Section 27 got added to the Constitution, there were some people who sought to really inappropriately use the provision. And long story short, we got decisions out of the Pennsylvania courts that said, this is just a statement of policy, that this right to a healthy environment, even though it's in the Bill of Rights section of the Constitution, does not have the same legal standing or strength or enforceability as all those other rights that are in the Bill of Rights section of the Constitution. And so essentially, legislators could, and all government officials could take it or leave it when it came to their constitutional duty to protect environmental rights. And that's the way it stood for 42 years. Fast forward to 2012, when the Pennsylvania legislature decided to pass a very pro-fracking law known as Act 13. Now, fracking was already here, wreaking havoc, but this law would have made it worse. It gave the industry automatic waivers from environmental protection standards. It alleviated them of the obligation to notify those on private drinking water wells, to notify them if there had been potential contamination by fracking operations. It mandated by virtue of state law that fracking be allowed to happen in every part of every community, including environmental and historic preservation areas and in residential districts, right? Well pads had to, operating well pads had to be allowed to be located as close as 300 feet from people's homes. That's less than a football field. So, and there was more. Right, there was more in this gift basket to the industry. And so as bad as things were, it was gonna get a whole lot worse if Act 13 had been allowed to be implemented. So I, in my role as the Delaware Riverkeeper, my organization, the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, represented by a incredibly brilliant attorney, Jordan Yeager, decided that we were going to challenge Act 13. We also learned that there were other municipalities that wanted to challenge Act 13 on other grounds. And they were also represented by amazing attorneys, John Smith and Jonathan Kamen. And we all teamed up to challenge Act 13. The argument that the Delaware Riverkeeper Network brought to this joint venture through our attorney was that provisions of Act 13 that we were challenging were going to, if implemented, violate the environmental rights of the people of Pennsylvania. Article 1, Section 27. And in December of 2013, out of a very conservative Pennsylvania Supreme Court, we got an amazingly powerful victory, which amongst other things, recognized clearly, compellingly, powerfully, that the people of Pennsylvania did have an enforceable right to pure water, clean air, and a healthy environment, that Article 1, Section 27 must be constitutionally and legally treated like every other right in the Bill of Rights section of the Constitution. And instantly we raised up the rights to a healthy environment to be on par with those other fundamental rights and just have incredible, powerful constitutional and legal strength. In the wake of that victory, we at the Delaware Riverkeeper Network and others in the state inspired by our victory were doing the work of taking advantage, right, of this victory and this now living constitutional right to a healthy environment. But as we were going forth and doing that work, I started to think more and more about how powerful this victory was, how powerful it was legally, but also how powerful it was for advocacy, right? For the way people were thinking about the environment as a true right that is on par with those other fundamental freedoms. It's just a transformational shift. And so I started to look at all the other state constitutions across the nation. I've looked at every single one. And what I found was that there was only one other state, Montana, that had what I defined to be a green amendment of this kind, a right to a healthy environment in the Bill of Rights section of the Constitution that is generational, does include future generations, and that is enforceable as soon as it is added to the Constitution. You don't need laws to interpret it or to get benefit from it. As soon as it's added, you have an enforceable legal right. And so only Montana and Pennsylvania have that. And that's when I decided that I would write my book, The Green Amendment, to explain how and why our current system of environmental laws are failing us, tell the stories of the people and the communities that are being harmed by environmental devastation, and then hopefully try to inspire people to want to join me in seeking the passage of green amendments in every state across the nation. The book was well received, it won an award, which was lovely. And then I decided, you know, time to create an official national organization. So have now founded Green Amendments for the Generations and really work to inspire, educate, and partner with organizations in other states across the nation to advance this powerful idea.
It's really exciting to see what's happened over these last few years with it. And I distinctly remember the feeling of when the grand jury made that decision back in 2013. And it felt like it was a major monumental step in the right direction, and how hopefully we can transition away from this dirty industry. And that kind of leads me into like my next question is, so we have this Green Amendment. It's existed longer in our state constitution than the hydraulic fracturing industry has. So how and why do Pennsylvania legislators continuously violate the Constitution when they're sworn to uphold and defend the Constitution, which still includes the Green Amendment? And it's really frustrating to know that you have this, but then there's just this stark contradiction.
Yeah. So I truly believe if we had a legally living, thriving Green Amendment in Pennsylvania when the frackers came in the mid-2000s, we could have used our Green Amendment to keep the industry out. I truly believe that. The problem is that when you look at the history of events, the frackers got to Pennsylvania before Pennsylvania's Green Amendment was given legal life by the Supreme Court in 2013. And so they were already here. So you have to think about it. It's almost as if a Green Amendment were just passed in December of 2013. And if that had happened, and as it happened, all the bad stuff doesn't sort of instantly poof go away, right? We don't instantly know what can stay and what must go as a result of this constitutional environmental right. We have to now do the work case by case by case, saying if you approve a well pad here, that's a violation. If you approve fracking there doing that, that is not. If you allow a pharmaceutical industry to discharge this much pollution in an already overburdened community, that's a violation of the Green Amendment, not to mention environmental justice. But if you do it this way here, where you contain your contaminants, then you're okay, right? So we have to go forth and do that work. Every time, though, we bring a case and we have a success, we set a precedent. We set a new floor for all things that come thereafter, right? And then there's another bad project comes, we bring another legal challenge. We're victorious. We set another floor. And so over time, we raise the bar that will eventually give us the protection that we need. But the frackers were here first. And so we're having to literally, like I said, claw back the ground to protect ourselves. Now, when it comes to the legislators, there is just absolutely no excuse for them ignoring their constitutional duty. And the way we hold legislators accountable is, first off, if they pass illegal legislation or engage in illegal activity, right, we challenge them. That's what we did with Act 13. And there have been some other cases that have followed where they have also, what they've sought to do has been undermined and rolled back by our, you know, the legal challenges of environmentalists and community members. But the other thing is, you know, when people are running for office, to be, have a clear understanding through their actions of what they think about your right to clean water and clean air. And if they're helping to advance the fracking industry in this way, no matter what they say to you, they do not actually believe that you have a truly defensible constitutional right to clean water. And guess what? That means that they should not be put back in office. And when we have challengers that also spew the same nonsense that fracking is fine, well, guess what? They shouldn't get your vote either, right? I mean, we really have to use the Green Amendment in all of the many ways we can use it. We need to use it in litigation. We need to use it to support our advocacy. We need to use it in conversation with our decision makers to press them, to hold them accountable. And we need to always remember it when we go to the ballot box and not elect people to office that will not uphold their obligation, you know, all of their obligations under the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's critically important to continue that fight. And it's just so frustrating when it's like...
It is. Yeah. But I believe, see, this is one of the things too, right? You have to think about it. I mean, how many people listening, watching, learning, thought about the idea that they had a right to free speech and a right to bear arms, but that they did not actually have the same kind of right to clean water and clean air. Most people don't think about it because until I tell them about it, because they're not taught to think about the environment in those terms. So as soon as people get that message, right, we start to raise the bar. We start to elevate not just the level of conversation, but the level of expectation that people have of their government officials. Right now, people are starting to see the benefits of a green amendment in Pennsylvania and Montana. But as we get more and more states, and we have green amendment proposals already in 5 states. Now they haven't passed, they're proposals, but that shows that, you know, the power of this idea is catching on. And we have other states where this idea is building and advancing as well. But as we start to get green amendment conversations and press and amendments actually passed in state after state after state after state, we are going to be broad brush raising the level of conversation and expectation of all people. And that's going to start to be heard in the halls of the Capitol buildings. That's going to be start to be understood in the judicial chambers, right? It just raises, I mean, if think about the civil rights movement, think about all the passage of the 13th, 14th, 15th amendments, they started to make change, but then you had to have powerful advocacy and litigation by so many powerful civil rights leaders. And it has been over time that we've been able to elevate the bar. We didn't hop there. It's through a lot of hard work. But as you got civil rights appreciated and respected through a lot of hard work in community after community, through litigation, through advocacy, through political leadership, you started to elevate the conversation in other states across the nation. So that's what's going to happen with this Green Amendment movement, and is happening with this Green Amendment movement. The more states where the conversation is happening, the more awareness we're getting, and we're really starting to elevate the bar. And I want people to know, we will eventually go for a federal Green Amendment, but we can't jump there because we won't be victorious. Donald Trump or not, we wouldn't be victorious. We need to do the groundwork first. And good grassroots strategy says you start with the states, because you need a vote of 3/4 of the states to pass a federal constitutional amendment. So let's go state by state, educating, passing green amendments, and then we'll lay the groundwork necessary for a federal green amendment down the line. Mm-hmm. Soon down the line. I've got very high expectations for how fast this is all going to go.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that kind of leads me to my next question, but I did want to step back and address an earlier point you made of like how people know that they have a constitutional right to free speech or to bear arms, but they don't know that they have a constitutional right here to clean air, clean water, and a safe environment. And I think that goes back to like a societal problem we have. And especially in this conversation, in these last few weeks with Black Lives Matter movement, I think we see a lot of like how our very white dominated culture is heavy on ownership of the land, and the land is property, and the land is not, is something separate from humans, when at this point we know that that is false, and a kind of understanding that this whole indigenous knowledge too of the land, that it's like we're a part of the land, not separate from the land. Mm-hmm. And when we experience these contamination sites from the fracking industry, people don't just, how would I put it? Like, people get sick. It's not like people are immune to the pollution and all the heavy metals that are released during the process, that somehow magically does not affect them. It does. And I just felt like that's an important thing to bring about, because I don't think many people realize that. I think people are starting to realize that, but I don't know.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, a part of the environmental conversation always is, it's so important to have that public health piece of it, and also to have the economic piece of it, right? Because they're also, you know, it's been proven time and again, when you have a highly contaminated environment, guess what? Your economy doesn't do well for a whole boatload of reasons. But one of the reasons why people do know about the right to free speech and freedom of religion is they learn about it in school. Mm-hmm. They don't learn about the right to a healthy environment, because at least here in Pennsylvania, we didn't have that until our successful litigation in December of 2013. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we do have actually a teacher guide and a student guide where that we make available to all educators to try to get the message into the classroom. So if you're in Pennsylvania or Montana, you can educate your students that they do have these rights. And if you're in other states, you can educate them that they don't have these rights, but that they should have them. Mm-hmm. I do want to say two things that you mentioned, which I think are really important. Well, so many things you mentioned are important. But the Native American communities that we're working with in places like New Mexico are really excited by the Green Amendment, because it does show that connectivity between, you know, people and nature. But it also has built into it, at least the Green Amendments that you know, the model language that we put forth, the generational language about protecting the environment for present and future generations. And also in this moment of critical and powerful protest, right, for systemic reform of police, education, or healthcare system, we are trying to also inject into the conversation that systemic reform must include ending environmental violence and environmental racism, which is built into the laws that we have in place. And a Green Amendment can, in one fell swoop, help level the playing field. Because when you have a Green Amendment, every single person, regardless of their race or their ethnicity or how much money they make or where they live, they all have the same constitutional right to a healthy environment. And their government officials become duty bound to protect all people and all communities equitably. And so if you have this situation where you've got an environmental sacrifice zone targeted time and time and time again for environmentally devastating activities, you can use the Constitution to challenge that unconstitutional racism. So it's really another powerful element of systemic reform for, you know, addressing the tremendous racist inequities that we have in this nation to this day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a really good point of using that whenever there is environmental injustice and always having this to fall back on. So then kind of shifting to a little more present times as far as, well, fracking's always been an issue, but lately the conversation both across the state and across the country and the world, we've been talking about the climate crisis. I mean, I just read an article out from The Guardian that said, the current temperature rate at which we're at right now is the highest it's been for the first time in 15 million years. So with all that said, how could the Green Amendment be utilized to fight for climate justice and to combat the climate crisis here in Pennsylvania?
So, awesome question. And a Green Amendment is an incredibly powerful tool and very, very important in this day and age when we need fast progress, right, on the climate crisis. So one thing, in Pennsylvania, Montana's Green Amendments, they don't specifically, they talk about water, air, and certain qualities of the environment, but they don't specifically talk about climate. Mm-hmm. So when I go into a community to advocate for the advancement, you know, and try to inspire the advancement of Green Amendments modern day, I specifically include pure water, clean air, a stable climate, and then various critical aspects of a healthy environment. So that there can be no doubt, no question, that there is a constitutional duty to protect the climate as well as the air and the environment more generally, right? And so then every time you have something advancing that could have a climate impact, right, you can use the Constitution in your advocacy, in your litigation, to try to address that. But that doesn't mean that if you don't have climate specifically mentioned, like in Pennsylvania, Montana, that climate isn't captured. I mean, if you hear Senator Curry, right, the originator of Pennsylvania's Green Amendment speak, he speaks very powerfully about how a climate is part of the constitutional obligation under Pennsylvania's Green Amendment, the way it's written, with those references, right, to the water, to the air, to the critical aspects of a healthy environment, and the duty of government officials to protect all the natural resources of the state for the benefit of all the people, that the climate really is wrapped up in there in a variety of ways, whether you want it to be just a focus on the air or you want to be talking about from a healthy environmental perspective, healthy environment perspective, there are many ways to wrap it in, but it is there. And so government officials become duty bound to think about it, to address it proactively if there is a green amendment in the state. And we are trying to, you know, use it that way in Pennsylvania and Montana. And when we look at states like New Mexico and like Colorado and like Arizona, other states, right, where you have the fossil fuel industry is so overwhelming, right, there is a lot of interest in the people in the Green Amendment concept, in part because of those climate benefits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's important you note that because last summer I attended a sustainable energy conference, like a regional one, and when I attended this conference, there was somebody that was from the governor's office that spoke about the most recent climate action plan for the state of Pennsylvania. And my one question specifically was for the person talking about the plan is that they wanted to, I guess the state is looking to reduce its emissions, CO2 emissions. I don't know what the date, like, that they're trying to achieve of previous emission rates to, but they said they want to lower their CO2 emissions by 35% by 2050. And the biggest thing that I was really frustrated with, I was like, that's not enough. We need to be net zero by 2050, if not net zero in less than 10 years. And it's really interesting to see how even writing a climate action plan, do the issuers of the climate action plan for the whole state even think about this green amendment? Because to me, it seems like it doesn't go enough. And I've almost thought about, like, is there a way that you could challenge that climate action plan that isn't enough when using the Green Amendment? Because this, I guess the next climate action plan doesn't come out for another 7 to 10 years. So, or what does that mean? I mean, the next time one comes out, it's going to be too late.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, these are, in some ways, this is part of what we're exploring too, right? Again, it's that case by case by case by case. And you know, how far can we push it without also picking bad cases that roll it back, like what happened for those first 42 years? But so we are looking to answer exactly those kinds of questions as well, like how can we use this to deal with the climate action plan, to deal with other decision making that clearly has an impact on the climate, where the government is falling down on the job. And we will only know the answer to the question when we bring that legal action and we're successful. And then we'll know that was the right way to use it. But we have to be trying on that litigation front. We have to keep trying, but we have to be smart how we do it. But then again, it also goes back to my point about elevating the expectations and the dialogue more broadly. It's a lot easier for Pennsylvania legislators to just keep batting down their constitutional obligations and for the rest of us having to, through our advocacy and litigation, hold them accountable, or hopefully through elections, hold them accountable, it's easier to do that than if you've got a national movement of reform, right? Like if you were in one state where you are denying somebody's fundamental rights and nobody around you in any of the other states is paying attention to that issue, well, it's a lot easier with you in your state to get away with it. And it's sort of this battle within your state boundaries. But if you have broad recognition in state after state after state of people's rights, and you've got battles and conversations and press and accountability happening all across the nation, well, it's harder to avoid the spotlight of accountability and ultimately change. But it is for me too. I can't tell you how many times I go into a community, you know, and we are facing some devastating harm. Sometimes it's fossil fuel, sometimes it's otherwise. And just like you, it's like, how can this be possible? We have a green amendment. And then even I have to remind myself, because we just got our green amendment 7 years ago. And in the history of the law, that's not very long. But we did defeat Act 13. And there was a successful legal action that said that the state government couldn't misappropriate dollars that were meant for natural resource protection to fill the general operating budget. We are right now using the Green Amendment to force the Pennsylvania government to put in place drinking water protections from PFAS, PFOS, PFOA contamination. Just our ongoing litigation is spurring them to action. We do have an ongoing case, which is pushing change, where there is an over 30-year site, highly super saturated with TCE and a spreading pollution plume, dangerous to the environment and dangerous to the communities, where the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection spent more years trying to help a developer develop residential communities on that site while it remains contaminated, then holding the deep pocket corporations that they know are legally responsible, then forcing them to clean up the site. And so we're using the Green Amendment successfully. We've gotten a court already to say to the DEP, your failure to act to clean up the site, yes, that can be a violation of your constitutional obligation. And the case is pushing forward in the courts. When the state has tried to get the case dismissed, we've gotten powerful decisions along the way that have helped us advance it. So there are, those are just a few examples of how a Green Amendment is driving important protection and change in the fracking context and outside of the fracking context. But it does feel painfully slow. I'm with mm-hmm. you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So just to clarify and to kind of summarize here, so Pennsylvania's Green Amendment has been on the books for decades, but it didn't have legal authorization or legal action or oversight.
Life. I always call it legal life.
Legal life. There you go. Until this grand jury ruling that happened back.
Supreme Court.
Sorry. Thank you. Yeah. Supreme Court. Back in 2013, correct? Yes.
Yep.
So yeah. if we had a national at the federal level Green Amendment, let's just theorize here, how could this help to force climate action to occur on the federal level? Because first of all, Donald Trump pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord as soon as he could, to the fact that there's been deregulation after deregulation after deregulation of any sector, even if it isn't climate related or not, it's still heavy deregulation of environmental laws and creating laws to then stop pro-environmental actions to take place. So I guess theorizing here, how could a Green Amendment benefit all these issues that we're seeing at the federal level to be pushed through or to be denied?
Yes, I believe very, very important. I believe very, very deeply in the importance of visualization and visualizing our success. And so, yes, when I visualize our success of when we get a federal green amendment, it will be powerful. This is the thing. So a state constitution holds state government officials accountable. And states have a lot of power that when it comes to the environment. That's why they have their own system of environmental protection laws and regulations and agencies and permitting and funding and all of those things. And so all those things at the state level become accountable to the state constitution. The federal constitution holds the federal government accountable, the president, the Congress, the EPA, and all the rest of them. And so when you look at the kinds of things that you talked about, when you're talking about deregulation or you're talking about advancing legislation that's devastating, when you're talking about the issuance of permits, right, that will drive forward the fossil fuel industry or, massive projects, highly polluting projects of one kind or another. The federal Green Amendment is what will apply to those federal actors in that regime. So one could have used in terms of, right, I know you're very aware of fracking. So the Halliburton loophole, right, that exempts the fracking industry from so many aspects of the law. Well, one could imagine if you had a federal Green Amendment, you could have used it to challenge the inclusion of that exemption from the Clean Water Act. You could have used the Green Amendment to challenge many of the rollbacks that are happening from water to air to species to otherwise. You'd use the legislation that's in place to the degree you can, but you would layer on a constitutional challenge. When the president tried to pulled out of the Paris Climate Accord, right, there's got to be that official decision making to come. But when he made that announcement and put us on that path, I can imagine a constitutional Green Amendment, properly framed, properly written, properly implemented, could be used to hold him accountable, to have stopped that. And I do want to say that, when I say properly written, framed, placed, that is so key, because there are a lot of constitutions, not the federal constitution, but there are a lot of state constitutions that talk about the environment in their constitutions, but they are not enforceable Green Amendments. They do not come anywhere close to what we have when we have a true, proper Green Amendment. And so that's why I really encourage people, please get in touch with me, get in touch with my organization, Green Amendments for the Generations, so that when we look to advance the Green Amendment in your state or ultimately at the federal level, we can make sure that all that key language is there. We can make sure nobody talks you into not putting it in the Bill of Rights, which is like deadly if it's not there, right? So, there's so much of what has been happening over the last 4 years and before could have been impacted had there been a federal Green Amendment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just makes me think what could these last 3.5 years have looked like if we already had a Green Amendment on the books?
Obama. Right? Obama, Bush, Clinton, they're all pro-fracking. Look at the current candidates running for office. How many of them are still talking about fracking as having a place in the current activities in our nation? It's just got to be a 100% no. Like you said, I mean, we have a few short years to save our present and future Earth and future generations from the most devastating aspects of climate change. The time really is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And in some ways, I feel like it's even past time, because now we're in a phase where it's like we're just trying to get as many things done before that tipping point happens. Any last thoughts before we start to wrap up here and I ask you some fun, quirky questions?
No, we could go with fun and quirky. I think I've done all the heavy stuff. Mainly, I just want people to know that really after 26 years of advocacy and litigation for the environment, our current system of environmental protection laws are truly failing us. Mm-hmm. We do need a new path, but this path really is available in the form of green amendments for the generation. So I really appreciate your appreciation for the green amendment strategy and look forward to working with all in your audience to advance it in their states and ultimately at the federal level as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you. So my first question is, if you had a definition for sustainability, what would it be?
Oh boy, that's not a quirky question.
there's quirky questions coming.
Okay. I mean, to me, it really is about living in harmony with nature. I know a lot of people look at numbers and things. I think something is only going to be sustainable if it's something where you can do it again in harmony with nature, the plants, the animals, the water, the air. I always say to people, when we best protect the earth, we best protect ourselves. That's sustainability. We have to best protect both.
Mm-hmm. So if you could take that definition and sum it up in one word, what would it be?
Harmony. I don't really know.
That's good. It's interesting to hear the different responses from people. Like I had another guest on a couple episodes back that was like, I don't know, sustain. I was like, I'm just looking for an answer more so than anything. Do you have a favorite vegan dish and what would it be?
Do I have a favorite? So I really, my entire diet, it consists of fruits and vegetables. And I love each and every one of them when they come in their time. So I actually don't have a favorite other than to say fruits and vegetables. And whatever happens to have come from my CSA and I happen to have in the cupboard, I throw it together and I'm a happy camper.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If you have a favorite sustainability brand, what would it be? It could be anything.
Favorite sustainability brand. I don't have one.
That's okay. Yeah, I actually had a guest on an episode, like a few episodes back, that she told me about this all-woman Black-owned business that makes all these feminine products that are all nature-based. And I don't know, it's really cool to hear what some people say. And it's interesting that, I don't know, we could all have different examples.
You know what? I think the reason why I don't have, I mean, and I'm sure this is for your other guests, but for me, I mean, the environment and environmental protection is infused into every aspect of my life. So I don't think about the brand. I think about, is it plastic or glass? Is it throwaway or reusable? Do I actually have to have it or can I go without? So it's more about the thing and the integration than it is who made it or how they made it.
Yeah, that's understandable. Other than the work that you do right now, is there any other dream that you would have of doing some sort of job with the environment or sustainability?
No, I'm doing exactly what I want to do, exactly what I was meant to do. The only additional dream I have really is for this Green Amendment movement to really take off and for us to get green amendments everywhere. I just believe so passionately in it. But I truly am humbled and honored by the fact that I came to my life's calling working for the earth when I was very young, right out of law school. I went right into it. And I feel like the universe put me where I needed to be from an early age. And I just, every single day, when I'm having a horrible day and I'm feeling angry or upset or frustrated, I really literally step back and say, I love my life. I love my life. And it's an honor to do what I do. And I remind myself of that. And mm-hmm. then sort of that stuff I can, because I really would never want to do anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I find that that's really inspiring. Because I think a lot of us, when we talk about the environment, it's like, there's this stigma that it's like we can't make a living around caring for the earth, or we can't do our passions and also have a livable wage or have a lifestyle where we can do both. And I find that super inspiring, and thank you.
Yeah, and you can. And I love that you say that, because you really can. And I'll tell you, when I was, you know, coming out of school, I really had a lot of people that tried to get me to sell out, because they wanted to sell out. Just go make a lot of money, pay off your law school loans, and then go do the right thing. But by that point, you have inflicted irreparable harm on the earth and on people, and you have blackened your soul, and you can never undo the damage that you've been that you have done. So I was very committed. I would not take a job that required me to sell out the earth. I just wouldn't do it. And I think that's one of the reasons why I got where I did. I always encourage people, right? When you follow your passion and you follow your moral compass, you will land in the best job for you. And you'll enjoy it and love it like you and I do, so that you won't be looking to do something else. You'll just be grateful every single day for the joy of what you get to do.
Yeah, yeah. I resonate with that so much, because I've had people tell me since college, and before starting this podcast, that they're like, well, couldn't you just like go back to school to do this? Or can't you just like get this job or this? I don't know. The list is endless. And it's just like, no, that's not what I want to do. That's not what I want to do. And yeah, it was frustrating figuring out how to get to this point. But I would have done this over again and have experienced the same level of frustration than to either sell out or compromise my interests and my love of certain things, especially the environment. Yeah.
Isn't it shocking too how many people are so committed to getting others to derail from their life dreams? Oh, you won't make enough money. Oh, you should. It's like, why are you so invested in me selling out my principles, my morals, my beliefs, the earth, my dreams, my hopes, my wishes? Like, what do you get out of not being supportive of me following my path? And the only thing that they can get out of it is, I guess somehow it assuages their guilt because they didn't do it, because they on some level believe that they sold out. And if they can get you to sell out, somehow they'll feel a little bit better about the fact that they did. And I think that that's really sad. I think that, you know, you just doing as you did, you have a vision and you strive and you strive and you strive, and you sell shoes or you do whatever you got to as you're finding your path. But you know, we can all find a way to get there, and you'll be best at doing what you love to do, which is mm-hmm. what will make you more successful anyway. So it's just the smartest thing. It's just the smart way to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Maya. It was a great conversation, and I'm excited to see future conversations that we can have together about the work you're doing and how we can work together to bring about more positive change here in Pennsylvania and in other parts of the region and the country. So thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for your dedication and for helping to spread the word. I'm so excited for you, and you have landed exactly where you should be, because you are an amazing interviewer.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks for listening to another episode of Sustaining with Shayna. You can now listen to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Anchor.fm, and many other platforms. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and, of course, leave a review or comment. To follow us on Facebook or Instagram, go to sustainingwithshayna.com. Also, what you read and listen to here on the platform was carefully created and curated content made just for you, the listeners. Any generous donations can help to keep me supplying you with great content. Just go to Sustaining with Shayna's website. Click on the donate page to donate. Glad you're here. Thanks a million for listening.